Hey, this is Pastor Ricky Ortiz at MetaChurch, and I just wanted to take a moment to say thank you for tuning into our podcast and supporting our ministry. If you'd like to learn more about MetaChurch, you can visit us online at meta.church, and we're praying this message inspires you and encourages you to pursue your relationship with Jesus. Hey, we begin a new series today, but before we jump into the series, I want to start by asking you a question, okay? And this is an all skate, so everyone gets to participate in this one, okay? Have you ever felt alone? Raise your hand. Okay, look around the room, because we're not alone in this moment. So everyone, okay, you can put your hands down. Like, now who here, you can don't have to raise your hand on this one, but who here has felt like really, really alone? Like, you entered a subway car and there's no one in this subway car. You get off at the subway platform and there's no one on the platform. Like, that's being alone, but you've actually felt that way inside. Have you ever felt that alone? Isn't it interesting that we live in a city with 8.5 million people, and in this city with 8.5 million people where there's people around you, next to you, above you, breathing on you, and yet you can feel entirely alone? And in fact, sociologists call this crowded isolation or crowded loneliness, where you are surrounded by people, but you feel like all by yourself. And then there's a song that came out last year by an artist that I really like. But one of the opening line or the opening kind of lyrics to this song, he says, "Does anyone feel like this? Show of hands, I don't need a lot." And his whole point, the song is titled Only. And his whole song is about how I feel like I'm the only person in the world that feels this way, that's experiencing this, that's all by my own. And he says, "Does anyone else feel this way? I don't need a lot. I just need to know that somebody somewhere out there has felt this way before." And you know, here's what I know about this whole situation or this whole thing of feeling alone is that nobody here in this room, nobody listening online or nobody watching online likes to feel alone. Nobody. Now, I know there's probably some smart aleck in the room who's thinking, "I actually like being alone." I didn't say you don't like to be alone. I said nobody likes to feel alone.
Right.
There's a difference. This isn't about being introverted or extroverted. This is about being known. This is about being seen. This is about being understood. It's not about being by yourself because people drive you crazy. Nobody likes to feel alone. We hate that feeling. You see, the feeling of being alone is a paralyzing feeling, because when you feel alone, what you find is that you experience fear. Oh my gosh, how am I going to get through this? How is this going to happen? What if nobody cares? What if I die and no one's even around to care about it? Being alone or feeling alone not only creates or incites fear, but it incites worry and anxiety. Where all you think about, all you kind of feel in your moment is that this is overwhelming. This is pressing in on me. The walls are closing in and no one is even around to care or to stop it. Feeling alone makes you feel powerless. It makes you feel like you've been overcome and that there's nothing you can do to change that situation, to change that circumstance. That feeling alone creates this paralysis that just kind of so powerful in your mind and so powerful in your body that you don't know what to do with it. But on the flip side, it's why there is so much power when someone responds and says, "Hey, I'm with you."
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
"I'm with you." There's so much power in these two words, "with you." When you feel like you're all by yourself, when you feel like you've got nowhere to go, when you feel like you're trapped, when you feel like you're overwhelmed, when you feel like the paralysis is kicking in because, oh my gosh, I'm by myself, no one cares, no one notices, I'm stressed out, I'm worried, I'm anxious, I'm fearful, I'm afraid. And then all of a sudden someone steps in and says, "Hey, I'm with you." Whether it's a friend. Now think about it just kind of on a surface level. Like, you have to go do something that you don't really want to do. A doctor's appointment or go to Brooklyn. It's like these things that you don't want to do. But then someone says, "Hey, I'll go with you." It's like, "Oh, okay, that's not that bad then. I'll do it." Right? You think about like parents to a child when you were a kid, maybe even still now. You know, a kid doesn't want to do something and the parent says, the dad says, "Hey, I'm with you. You got this. I'm right here with you." I think about G at the playground. She's 8 years old and still like overwhelmingly intimidated by the monkey bars. And so I'm like, "G, I'm right here with you, baby. Just one hand forward, then get the next." And she does like three. She's like, "I'm good. I'm good." I'm like,
I'm with you, you know, and I don't want to be that dad that just leaves their kid hanging, so I have to like grab her and like bring her down. Because she won't jump. She'll die before she lets go of the monkey bars. So I've got to like make sure, hey, I'm with you, which means I can take you off the monkey bars as well. Or you think about that spouse, you know, that husband, that wife, that boyfriend, that girlfriend, that person who's there and they say, hey, look, I know you're going to have a tough day at work. I know you're going to have a tough day at school. I know you're going to have a difficult situation in front of you. But hey, I just want you to know, like, I'm with you. And they send that text message, hey, I'm there with you. I'm here for you. They're not just saying it, but they're showing up in it. And all of a sudden, that fear or that feeling of being alone, the power that's presented in feeling alone has all of a sudden succumbed and give way to that power that's found in someone being with you. And you see, I think to me, this phrase or this concept, this idea is actually one of the most, if not the most appealing aspects of Christianity when you're looking at it from the outside looking in. You see, because unlike a lot of other religions, unlike a lot of other worldviews, unlike a lot of other belief systems, we have the promise that God is with you. You see, in other belief systems, that's not the promise. There's a promise of some sort of eternity. There's a promise of some sort of afterlife. There's a promise that you won't get, like, you know, smitten with something. But very rarely, you'd be hard-pressed to find another religion or another belief system in which the promise is not just something to come, but something for now, and that that now is God is with you. In fact, this is how Jesus himself being quoted or kind of God was quoted in Hebrews chapter 13. It says this. This is what God spoke. He said, I will never fail you. I will never abandon you. In other words, I will always be with you. You see, this is like a construct, a promise in one direction, but that means the alternative of this promise is also true. God will never leave you, which means he will always be with you. And Jesus spoke these words saying, I will always be with you. Now, we all know that there's a difference between someone saying it and someone doing it. Hey, I'll go to Brooklyn with you, but then when you text them, they're ghosting you. That's a little bit different. But when someone shows up and when someone steps into that moment and when someone says, hey, not only will I be there with you, not only will I say that I'll be with you, but I'm stepping into this moment and I'm going to show up and be in it with you. All of a sudden, things change. You see, and the way God looks at this is not just I will never abandon you, not just that I will never neglect you, not just that I will never forget you. He says I will be with you, and he will be with you through it all, the highs and the lows, the valleys and the mountaintops, the deserts and the fruitful places, the successes and the failures, and everything in between. You see, there's a lot of people who will ride with you when things are good. But then when things turn bad, they're bouncing and they're quick to step out. Right. And there's a lot of people, surprisingly, there's also a lot of people who will be with you when things are bad. But the moment you start to experience good and the moment you start to step into success and the moment you start to experience victory, they can't handle it. And so they want to either keep you down or they'll push you away. Right. And God, there's not a lot of people, it seems like, who will just kind of go with you in the middle. You either need to be really high or really low for most people because it just seems like, well, if you're in the middle, that's just meh to me. But God says, in all of those situations, I will be there. In all of those situations, I will be with you. In the highs, in the lows, in the deserts, in the barren spaces, in the fruitful places, in the abundant spaces, in those moments. And see, some of you, I think for sure, showed up today feeling like, is God with me? Does anyone see me? Who's here? And God just wants to speak into this moment today and say, hey, I am with you in those moments. I'm with you in your success. No one else is celebrating you, but I'm cheering you on from the heavens. No one else is supporting you. Well, I'm lifting you up and propping you up when you feel like you don't even want to lift your head from the pillow in the morning. You feel like I've been depressed. I've been struggling. I've been tense or I've been worried or I've been consumed. And God is saying, hey, I am here with you. And he brought you to this moment. If for nothing more than to reveal and to speak that you don't have to feel alone, that God is with you. But if we're honest, is it okay to be honest? Yeah. Okay, because I'm going to be honest anyway. If we're honest, I think we would all admit, I know I would admit, that I don't always feel like God is with me. If we're honest, I think every person here could probably list at least one, if not a handful, maybe some of you, I got 15 situations that I could show where God wasn't with me. we would all recognize that there have been times in our lives, moments of vulnerability, moments of fear, moments of success, where you say, okay, well, where is God in this? I know I'm doing this. I know I'm getting through it, but where is God? Because I do not see him. I don't feel him. And he doesn't seem to be with me. But you know what I've learned in like 13, 14 years of pastoral ministry? You know what I've learned? This is really interesting. I've learned 99.9% of the time, the problem is not Jesus. It's a shocker. Now in my life, I feel like it's Jesus. But when I observe and when I engage and when I connect with other people and when I see what's happening in their lives, I recognize the problem is not Jesus. And what I mean by that is it's not that Jesus is not with them. You see, more often than not, the problem is that we are not with him. You see, with you works both ways. And here's what I mean by that, because a lot of times people will say things like, well, he didn't heal my dad. He didn't provide me that job. He didn't answer this request. He didn't respond to that praise. He didn't do this situation. In fact, I worked my way into that situation. Now, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to kind of gather evidence in those types of statements and see that at the center of it is one person, me. Jesus didn't do what I wanted. Jesus didn't respond the way I needed. Jesus didn't ask or respond or move in the way that I expected. Now, the funny part is if you say, well, did he promise you that? Well, I mean, no. The answer is no. But there's this reality that it's not just about Jesus being with you, but a declaration and a commitment that you have to make and say, Jesus, I'm with you too. You see, with you only works when both parties are saying, I'm with you. I'm in this with you. You see, a marriage only works when the both spouses say, I'm with you and I'm committed to you. The moment one departs, the moment one veers away, all of a sudden problems start to arise. And when problems arise, it takes both people saying, hey, I'm in this with you and I'm willing to work through this with you. And we're going to get on the other side of this together because we stuck it out with one another. But in faith, we tend to operate differently. Yeah. That if Jesus doesn't show himself that he's with me in the way that I want, then I won't be with him. Yeah. I'm going to take my ball and play somewhere else. And you know, I think we all have this desire and this belief that like, yes, I'm with you, Jesus. Like if I were to just say, hey, how many of you would show of hands, say you are with Jesus? I would guess that out of sincerity and out of peer pressure, all of us would put our hands up. All of us would say, yes, I'm with you. But let me ask you a question before you jump the gun and before you start responding in that way or before you start speaking to this whole idea of being with you. Let me ask you a question. What is the number one thing you are praying for in your life? What is the number one thing you are believing for today in this moment? What is it? What are you burdened by? What are you longing for? What's that dream that you want to see fulfilled? What's that hope that creates so much anguish when it's not coming to fruition? What is it in your life? And let me ask you this question. If Jesus came to you today and said, hey, Ricky, I hear what you want. I hear what you're praying for. I see what you're believing for. And I will not give it to you, but you can have me. Would that be enough? How would you respond? Now, your face tells me everything I expected. Because I feel that same way too. It's a gut check moment. Yes, I'm with you, Jesus. But if Jesus said, hey, Ricky, this dream that you've been praying for, believing for 7 years, I'm not going to give it to you, but you can have me. Oof. That's going to be a punch in the gut. That's going to be hard. In other words, the question I'm asking you, is Jesus alone enough? No one likes to feel alone, but the question that I want to pose to you today is Jesus alone enough? Not Jesus plus the blessings. Not Jesus plus the miracles. Not Jesus plus the job. Not Jesus plus the dream. Not Jesus plus the house. Not Jesus plus the husband. Not Jesus plus the wife. Not Jesus plus the money. Not Jesus plus the 10,000 Instagram followers. Jesus alone. Is he enough? And if you struggled to answer that prior question about Jesus saying no, but you can have me, then chances are the answer to this is no. And listen, it's okay because we're not here to throw stones at one another. Because I think, again, if we are all honest, we will all admit that there are times in our lives where the answer to this question is yes, but there are also times when the answer to this question is no. And the goal of this series is not to say you're bad because you don't believe Jesus alone is enough. The goal of this series is to navigate for the next 6 weeks so that we get to a point where we say, yes, Jesus alone is enough. Not the miracles, not the blessings, not the answered prayers, not the job, not the career, not the house, not the family, not the relationships. Jesus alone is all I need. And Jesus alone is enough. You know, imagine if you would, for just a moment, that you were Jesus. Just imagine, it's kind of fun. Imagine what it must feel like to know you're capable of doing anything and everything, and that the people who are committed to you seem to be more committed to what you can do for them than committed actually to you. Now, we can imagine that situation because we've all experienced people who just want something from us but don't want to be with us. Yet Jesus experienced this himself. In fact, if you were to look at John chapter 4, where we'll be this morning, John chapter 4, starting in verse 46, there's a story that takes place. Now, this story actually comes out of a very familiar story, a story that many of us know very well. But if you don't know, basically, this is what happens. Jesus goes to a region, goes to a part called Samaria, a place where people like Jesus didn't really hang out. He meets a woman at a well, asks her for some water. She's shocked because Jesus, a Jewish man, is talking to a Samaritan woman. Jewish men don't talk to Jewish women, let alone Samaritan women. And Jesus asks her for water. She gives him water. And Jesus reveals to her that he is the Son of God. She is blown away by all the things Jesus has to say. She goes back to her village. Her whole village comes. She says, listen, you got to meet this guy who told me everything I ever did. They show up. They meet Jesus. And they respond. And they believe. But Jesus, while still in this region, while still in this area of Samaria, he comes into contact with a guy. Verse 46, it says this: as he traveled through Galilee, he came to Cana, where he had turned the water into wine, which was the first miracle Jesus ever did. It says there was a government official in nearby Capernaum whose son was very sick. Now, this is about a one-day journey from Capernaum to Cana. And so his son, this government official, his son was very sick. Verse 47, when he heard that Jesus had come from Judea to Galilee, he went and begged Jesus to come to Capernaum to heal his son, who was about to die. And then notice Jesus' response, verse 48. Jesus asked, will you never believe in me unless you see miraculous signs and wonders? Think about the tone. Think about Jesus' feeling. I just spent time with a whole village of people who I did nothing for, and they all believe. And now a man comes begging me and says, will you just come, do this thing for me. And Jesus says, will you never believe in me unless I do something for you? Am I not enough? Is being around me not enough? Is being with me not enough? Must I answer your prayers? Must I answer your miracle or provide the miracles? Must I speak to you in ways that are mind-blowing? Must I do something of some sort of significance just to get you to say, yes, Jesus, I'll be with you? Now, it's interesting because if we go back to verse 47, we see this man's tone was desperate. He heard Jesus had come from Judea to Galilee, and he went and begged Jesus to Capernaum to heal his son who was about to die. That is a moment of desperation. I can understand why, as a father, you would do whatever it takes to get your son, to get your child healing and life and hope and perfection back to restoration, and that you would go any distance. You would try anything you could. You would do this. But this man went and he begged Jesus to come. Jesus, this is what I need you to do. This is what you have to do. I need you, Jesus, to stop doing what you were doing with these people in this region and come back to my people in my region to respond to what I have right now. And if you go back to the previous verse, verse 46, it's really interesting because I think his position was more than a position, it was a posture. You see, this says there was a government official. The Greek word used here actually directly translates to noble. So he was someone of the royal family, someone of nobility, someone of significance, someone who was used to getting whatever they wanted when they wanted it. Someone who spoke and people acted. Someone who moved and people responded. Someone who had the ability to say, "You, this is what I need from you." And you know what that does? It creates entitlement. It creates expectation. And it creates a false reality that someone else is at your beck and call. Now, it's easy to throw stones at this guy because we're not him, but the truth is we actually are. How many times have we approached Jesus and said, "Hey, Jesus, I need you to do this for me. Hey, Jesus, I need you to stop what you're doing in some other part of the world and respond to my situation in my part of the world. Hey, Jesus, what's happening? What's taking you so long? I don't have time. Do you see this as urgent? Do you see my dream is dying? Do you see my chances for a relationship are dying? Do you see this job is dying? Do you see my family member is dying? Jesus, I need you to respond to what I have going on in my life." Now, it's challenging because I've been guilty of that. It's convicting because I think about how frequently I respond to Jesus in this way. And I think about my own life and my own relationship where I get upset, where I get bothered, and I think about what I need Jesus to do. You see, a lot of times, if I'm honest, my relationship with Jesus looks a lot like this: Jesus plus something. You can fill in the blank for you. I can fill in the blank for me. Jesus plus something. Jesus, I need you and XYZ. Jesus, I need you plus this situation resolved. Jesus, I need you plus this amount of money in my account. Jesus, I need you and this number of friends. Jesus, I need you and this type of situation to be reversed or changed or altered or fixed or corrected. Jesus, I need you and I need my mom healed. Jesus, I need you and I need my depression gone. Jesus, I need you and my hope restored. And you know, Jesus, out of his grace and out of his mercy, chooses to respond. In fact, he healed this man's son. He spoke a word and it was enough. And the boy was healed. And the man would believe, and his whole family would believe, and they would know Jesus, and they would be with Jesus. So it's not a threat of like, well, if it's Jesus plus something, then, you know, he's not going to respond. Because Jesus is so much more compassionate, so much more gracious, so much more loving than we can comprehend, than we can understand, or than we can even replicate. But Jesus plus something is not the right equation. In fact, it needs to be Jesus plus nothing equal everything. Jesus plus nothing ought to equal everything. Now, this is really hard to understand. This is really hard to grasp in a very literal sense. But even just a few weeks ago, a month ago, you know, I've shared this throughout, but for those of you who are unaware, my father passed away unexpectedly on December 31st. And from January 1st, well, I guess January 2nd through January 7th, when I flew down to Florida to begin the process of taking care of my dad's affairs and sorting that out, I went on my own. My wife, my daughter stayed here because school and different responsibilities back here until we had an idea of what was going to take place. And I was on my own. I mean, I had my family, you know, I had people reaching out, texting, things like that, calling, checking in. But I was on my own. And I sat there and I would pray. And I was like, God, like, I need you. I don't have anything right now. I don't have my wife. I don't have my daughter. I don't have my church family. I don't have my close friends. I'm here in this place where I don't live. I'm trying to do something I've never done before. I'm trying to deal with this reality that was completely unexpected. And God, I've got nothing. And Jesus just responded. He said, Ricky, is that enough? Is that enough? Because you're coming to me as if you want me to give you something else. And it wasn't like beating me down. It wasn't like kicking me while I'm down. It was very gentle and very nurturing. And he said, Ricky, because if that's enough, then what you'll find is you have everything you need. You'll have everything you want. And listen, I'll tell you, those 5 days were some of the loneliest days of my life. Some of the most difficult days of my life. No exaggeration. It's fresh. It's new. But no exaggeration. And in the darkness of those days is where I realized and I started to see that, yes, Jesus plus nothing is my everything. That Jesus alone is sufficient. That Jesus alone is good. That Jesus alone can navigate me through this. That Jesus alone is going to provide. And it's like I said, it's not that Jesus won't provide in other situations. It's not that he doesn't or he withholds blessings if we add something to him. It's just that Jesus alone, when we realize that reality and we can step into that and embrace the fact that Jesus plus nothing equals everything, the blessings and the goodness and all of those things that we desire and all of those things that we long for and all of those things that we need overflow, not just out of God's mercy, but out of God's proximity in our lives. You see, God will bestow good things on you out of his grace and out of his mercy, but it's so much richer, it's so much better when he's bestowing good things on your life because of his proximity to your life. It's not just that he's with you, but it's that you've decided, I will be with you, Jesus. And you know, the ironic thing about all of this is that this equation is the exact same thing Jesus has and holds himself to. In fact, his equation is like this. You plus nothing equaled everything to him. It wasn't you plus your perfection. It wasn't you plus your good enough. It wasn't you plus your freedom from worry. It wasn't you plus your healing from anxiety or depression. It wasn't you plus your job. It wasn't you plus your family. It wasn't you plus your skill. It wasn't you plus your ability. It was you plus nothing meant everything to him, so much so that he was willing to die for it. Yeah. As you were, and as he found you, there wasn't a get your life together and then you'll be good enough. There wasn't a when you figure this thing out, then you can come to me. When you read the Bible cover to cover, then we can talk about this. You plus nothing equaled everything to Jesus. And all he asked in return is that Jesus plus nothing would equal everything to us. And so I want to close this morning. But before I close, I want to encourage you. And in fact, I want to exhort you to make a commitment to either be here every week or to listen online every week, because I really believe that as we navigate the next 5 weeks beyond this week, as we navigate through this series, what you're going to find is that, like a wedding vow, in sickness and in health, for richer, for poorer, you know, for better or for worse, Jesus is going to be with you through it all. And our declaration needs to be as a church, our declaration needs to be as an individual, Jesus, I know you're with me through it all, and I want you to know I'm going to be with you through it all. And we want to escort you to that point. We want to guide you to that commitment. We want to guide you to a place where 2020, we have no idea what's on the horizon. We don't know what successes we're going to experience. We don't know what failures we're going to incur. We don't know what hurts or grievances are going to come our way. We don't know what joys and blessings are going to be bestowed upon us. But we do know no matter what we face, no matter what we go through, there is a God who will go through it with you. And we should be the type of people who will go through it with God.
Hey, thanks for listening to this week's podcast. We hope it encourages you in your faith and blesses you throughout the week. If you'd like to find out more about Meta Church, you can find us online at meta.church. And we hope to see you again next week on the podcast.